This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're talking about the different approaches schools are taking to facilitate the start of the school year here in Indiana and the guidance they're using to make those decisions. Our conversation today is pre-recorded, so we won't be able to work your questions and comments into the live show, but we would still love to hear your thoughts. And you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana for that discussion. Joining me now is WFYI's education reporter, Eric Weddle. Eric, great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Matt. I appreciate it.
Say I'm a student. My first day of school, what does it look like this year? Is it going to look a lot different depending on what school I attend? Can you describe some of the different approaches?
Yeah. I mean, no matter what, it's going to look different. I mean, I don't think any schools in the state is going to look like it did before mid-March when the schools closed down to the pandemic. So right now, I mean, I'd say there's about three different ways schools right now are operating in general. And one is just doing full-on in-person school when students are going to school. And there's a lot of different, you know, precautions being taken that we can get into in a bit. And then other schools are letting school districts are letting families choose to go in school or do a virtual remote learning, one or the other. So a student would be doing like full-time virtual learning from their home. And then a third is called a hybrid. And that's basically where the school district is going to have days students are in class learning and then days when the students are at home. And that could be alternating student bodies. That could be different grades. Some schools have started doing that where they're actually going to like take off one day a week and clean the whole each building. So those are like the three main ways you're seeing schools reopen in some form.
Well, let's look at some of those precautions. I mean, for schools that have or will return in person, some haven't opened back up yet. Are there any kinds of mandatory health or safety precautions that have got to be in place?
I mean, right now, you know, the state has put down the mask mandatory. Governor Holcomb has mandated that this applies to all students in third grade and above, that they need to wear a mask when they're in school. And of course, there are exceptions for students with disabilities and in certain settings. But beyond that, I mean, there's other kind of mandates you're seeing are coming from local mayor's offices, local health departments at county level, and local school boards are setting those up. And beyond that, there's just a lot of guidance that you're seeing from the state, such as maintaining physical distance between students, distance between students and teachers, how the buses should operate. And there's been guidance from the state health department, and the Indiana Department of Education has issued a pretty big report for schools to use.
Is there a difference between how an elementary school might open as opposed to a high school?
Well, I mean, I think that probably just, you know, depends on the size of the certain schools and the communities. But I think one thing people may start hearing about is called the pods or cohorting. And this may be easier done in an elementary school. And this is kind of where they're going to try and keep groups of students and sometimes a teacher or staff together throughout the entire day. So for elementary students, you know, they're not really going to be going to like, you know, math or chemistry and so forth. So they're kind of in a homeroom setting. And so they're trying to keep them together with their teacher. So maybe they would all eat together. They would all do the different things together. And that way it minimizes exposure. And also if a positive case did come back, it would be much easier to go back and trace who interacted with that person who is positive.
Some districts returned to in-person instruction already last week, the end of July. And within a matter of days, we've already seen some positive cases confirmed. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about these cases and how the schools responded?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a few that have been reported, and we're hearing about more and more, whether it's in the school. Also, we're hearing about athletic teams, student athletes. So Elwood Junior Senior High School, it closed for this week. The school district had opened up last week in Elwood. They're temporary closing after at least one staffer tested positive for COVID-19. And when they return, they're going to be taking time off once a week from in-person learning to clean that building. Avon Community Schools is probably one that's getting a lot of attention right now because they were the first district in the state to close back in March. And then June 29th, they were the first district in central Indiana to restart in person. And they have had a staff member last week, it was announced, was positive. And then today there's a new report about another staff member as well. Mm-hmm. And then on the sports thing, I mean, they're hearing a lot about different sports, but one example, LaPorte High School, they suspended football and wrestling and tennis teams after students connected to those programs came back positive.
And the infection rate of COVID-19 looks different from county to county, of course. Has the state offered any guidance to help schools navigate these reopening decisions?
You know, right now there has not been like a metric given for when schools should reopen or close, as we've seen in other states, like in New York. In New York State, they have basically said, if your region, the region of your school's in, if it's 5% infection rate or less, you're able to open. State Health Commissioner, the State Health Commissioner, Dr. Christina Box, you know, she's been asked this a lot, as the governor. And most recently, she said if the infection rate in Indiana gets to 10 to 15%, the state may look at making mandated changes. So today, August 4th, the infection rate is currently 7.3% on a 7-day average.
Indiana is offering a lot of autonomy to schools, but it does seem like they may step in if needed. In some cases, schools are juggling different guidelines and metrics from multiple sources. Marion County is an example. How are we seeing this play out?
Sure. Well, I mean, Marion County, there's been a lot of coordination among the 11 public school districts that were here since March when the schools closed. But in the past month, we've kind of seen the school districts start to take matters in their own hands and the school boards deciding how they're going to run the district, kind of in the absence of strict guidelines, you know, from the state or from really in the county. And just last week, the county did come out with its own metrics for when schools should reopen or close buildings. They said kind of their infection rate for elementary and high schools. But Indianapolis Public Schools District and Pike Township had already gone or just made their own metrics as well, which were actually stricter than the county's. And IPS Superintendent Alicia Johnson, she was asked after the school board meeting, just what they're doing with all this guidance they're getting from the federal, state, local levels, and if she wishes there was more of a concrete example for them to follow. And this is what she said.
Yeah, you know what's so interesting is we've gotten lots of guidance. We've gotten CDC guidance and IDOE guidance and State Department of Health guidance, Marion County Health Department guidance, lots of guidance, but nothing that was so concrete and explicit. And I understand the rationale around that in terms of wanting to make sure that everyone can sort of make decisions for their local context. But at some point, it becomes really important just to sort of know where should the bar be? Where is the stake in the ground around what is safe or safer and what is not? And so had it come earlier, sure, that would be great. We feel good about where we are right now, and we're ready to move forward with what we've set forward today.
And so I think, you know, what you're hearing from her is just there is a lot of frustration from teachers, superintendents, and others in the education field who want something to point to in terms of this is what state officials think is safe for me, my family, each other to return to school. And they're just not getting that yet.
For some schools, virtual learning was a big learning curve last spring. Has the state offered any framework for what virtual learning needs to look like this year?
Yeah, there definitely is. I mean, last, you know, March, if anyone is an educator or a parent with a student in school, you really saw a lot of school districts just basically trying to survive and offer some kind of remote learning option, especially for school districts that didn't offer it widely before. And some of what was done, I think school districts now admit, you know, it just wasn't great. So the State Department has come in, they've issued some guidelines in terms of like how much instruction a student should get in the elementary and the high school levels. And it kind of boils down to like, you know, an elementary student should have like 5 hours of instruction. And that does not mean 5 hours in front of a computer, you know, watching videos, but it kind of gives guidelines for there should be some videos, there should be some live instruction if that's possible, and then setting that student on to do other activities. You know, hopefully there's a parent or a caregiver that can help them do that, and they can bring that work back, show it, you know, through video conferencing, send it in. So there's a lot more robust guidelines of what effective virtual learning should look like going forward. And I think we're going to see a lot of schools, you know, figuring this out, but it is a struggle. I mean, for educators who have been in the classroom their whole careers teaching in person, and some of them now are going to be teaching to a computer screen. You know, it is a huge challenge.
If schools make the decision to go for fully virtual, that often requires buying technology for students so they can learn from home if they don't have it there themselves. If schools continue with in-person instruction, they're looking at increased sanitation, PPE costs, maybe personnel costs. What do these additional costs mean for schools?
Yeah, I mean, the budget question is, I think, in the back or the front of every school leader's mind, because there's still a big uncertainty about what's going to happen with state funding. I mean, so far, state funding for pre-K to 12 schools has not been cut yet. And there has been federal funding, you know, that's come through for some of these PPE costs. But it's unclear, you know, how long are we going to need to be buying hundreds of gallons of hand sanitizer or face masks for every student and every staff member in the school district. So these costs are building up. And some school districts are struggling to pay for them. Others are using these federal funds, and they're going through it very quickly to pay for it. So I think it's going to remain to be seen, you know, what happens in the next General Assembly session in terms of funding, and then also how long we are in this situation where we do need to provide these extra funds and these services to keep schools operating during the pandemic.
We've heard a lot of school districts say that they want to offer parents the choice to send their kids back or keep them home. What are you hearing from parents on this?
Yeah, I mean, I think that people do want the choice. I think it's, you know, you can find a parent who believes and wants their student to be in class, you know, and they think that's the best thing for them. And I think everyone agrees in-person teaching is the best method. But a lot of families I've talked to think that it is safe. You know, they have faith in the school. They have faith that there's going to be done, and they want that choice. Others I've talked to, and I think you can see, is they think there should be virtual only, you know, maybe until the start of the new year. There's a lot of fear from families, maybe, that someone can become affected, you can bring it home, or vice versa. So I think you're really going to find all kinds of ideas. Indianapolis Public Schools, they did a survey from parents, and, you know, there was not all, of course, families responded, but of those that did, there was, I think, a 45% of families said they wanted to come back in person to the school.
Eric Weddle is our education reporter for our flagship station, WFYI in Indianapolis. Eric, thanks for taking the time to talk today.
Thanks a lot, Matt. I appreciate it.
When we come back, we'll hear from a superintendent whose district reopened in-person instruction last week. We'll find out how those first days have gone and how they're managing the transition back. I'm Matt Pelser. That's in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today, we're talking about the different approaches school districts have taken to facilitating the fall semester. And if you have questions or comments on our show today, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. Greater Clark County Schools, a school district that serves about 10,000 students in southern Indiana, was one of the first districts to reopen in-person education last week. How have those first days back been going, and how do they look different than years before? Joining me now is the superintendent of Greater Clark County Schools, Mark Loeffner. Mark, welcome.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on.
So last week was the first time that many students and teachers in your district were back in the classroom together for the first time since March. What was the first day back like?
Well, you know, it went surprisingly smoothly. You know, I visited 8 schools on that Wednesday, met with each principal, toured each school. The kids were very compliant with wearing masks. Arrival, dismissal went well. I actually walked one high school building with Dr. Yazel, who works for the health department here in Clark County, and that went smoothly. So, you know, we feel like, you know, the start of school has gone well, even though we've had some, you know, some cases pop up in terms of positive cases where we've had to quarantine, you know, some kids and things of that nature.
We've had Dr. Yazel on the show before. He's a very pragmatic local health official. What did he think about the decision to open up the schools?
Well, you know, we started our planning process about 2 months ago, and we started surveying our parents about a little over a month ago, just to find out our numbers in terms of what parents wanted to do. And throughout the whole 2-month planning process, he's been very supportive of us opening schools, you know, and following the CDC guidelines, the American Academy of Pediatrician guidelines, and then the local health department state and the state department guidelines. And we feel like we've done that. And he's been very supportive of us, you know, trying to get schools open. And it's something that we felt was important for us to do. And we were able to do it.
Since last March, when it became clear that changes were going to have to be made, can you describe what the planning process for the start of this school year has been like?
Oh, my. The amount of hours that myself and my cabinet or executive team have put into this has been amazing. Because every time you ask one question and try to answer one question, it begets another question that you have to sort out and figure out, you know, whether it deals with transportation or food service or moving students in and out of schools or lunch, or just how we're going to do virtual learning versus in person. It's the amount of time we've spent on this has been unbelievable. But we wanted to try to, we had three priorities, you know, or guiding principles when we started planning for this. You know, our number one principle or priority was, how do we open schools safely for students and staff? We want to make sure that they stay safe. Our number two priority was, how do we still provide an excellent education for our students, whether it be virtual or in person or both? And then the third, you know, priority was, how do we maintain our enrollment? You know, and while some people may question that priority, you know, for Indiana school districts that where you have open enrollment, that's something you have to consider. You know, you don't want to lose enrollment and then possibly have to lay off teachers or RIF teachers, things like that.
Families in your district were provided a choice whether they wanted their children to return in person or virtually. What kind of response did you get on that?
Well, right at 90% of our parents responded to us. And basically the numbers broke down to where right at 68% wanted in person to send their child back in person, traditional model. About 25-27% wanted a virtual option, which we call the My School Online. At the high school level, we also have a virtual academy for the 9 through 12, grades 9 through 12 kids. And then there were about 5-6% that were undecided or undetermined, which, you know, now that school has started, they've made that determination. So we're sitting right at about 65-66% are in person, and the rest are virtual, which we felt like was a good number. You know, that's one of the reasons we didn't do the A day, B day hybrid. We felt like, you know, 65-66%, we're already close to that 50% threshold. So let's just go with what we have.
What kind of guidance has the state provided regarding a reopening plan?
Well, you know, the in-class document has helped quite a bit in terms of, you know, that guidance. Also, there's been a lot of guidance from the standpoint of transportation, PPE, supplies, materials. They've helped out a lot with that. So they've provided us, you know, with a lot of information for us to make decisions. But in saying that, they've also made it fairly clear that, you know, this is a local decision. You know, they're going to go with local control on this. The one area where I wish they would have provided a lot more guidance earlier was the mask issue. Before Governor Holcomb came out with his executive order for masks for grades 3-12, myself and my school board and our community spent far too much time, you know, discussing the mask issue, you know, and going back and forth on that. So, I wish he would have made that decision a little sooner, frankly.
What do you mean by that? What was the discussion like?
Well, do you go with required language, recommended, optional? What grades is it required versus recommended? We just spent way too much time going back and forth on that as a community, also a board, and as, you know, superintendent, just my administrative team. If he would have come out with that executive order sooner, it would have taken a lot of that off the table that we had to go back and forth with on our community with our parents. It really turned into a political thing, really, frankly. I mean, versus just let's make a decision and go forward.
So according to the most recent data from the Indiana State Department of Health, Clark County's overall test positive rate is 8.7%. CDC's recommended for reopening plans to be rolled back when that number is above 5%. And you're working, the district is working with local health officials to develop and monitor plans from a public health standpoint, right? So have those talks kind of centered in on those numbers, or are you looking at something else?
Well, you know, I've been working with Dr. Yazel and the Clark County Health Department very closely, you know, and have asked, you know, what's the threshold to where we have to shut down maybe a school or a community of schools, you know, and he really hasn't, you know, and I think the state health department has also said the same thing. There really is no specific number. You know, we're going to just, you know, work through this together as we go through it based on each school, based on even classrooms and communities. One of the unique things here in Greater Clark is we have three very different communities. You know, we have Jeffersonville, which is more of an urban type community. We have Charlestown, which is more a suburban rural community. And then we have New Washington, which is very rural. And so I think, you know, we're going to treat those communities very different, you know, in terms of looking at the numbers, looking at the percentage and how we treat each community. So Dr. Yeaz and I, you know, we'll continue to work with him. Whatever he recommends, we're going to follow, whether it's doing something with an individual school, an individual classroom, a community of schools. You know, if he comes to us and says, hey, our numbers are a little high in Jeffersonville, you know, I may want you to go ahead and just put all the Jeffersonville schools on e-learning for a couple weeks. You know, we'll do that. If he recommends we do that, you know, we're going to follow his recommendation.
We're talking about the different approaches school districts have taken to facilitating the fall semester. And we're joined by Superintendent of Greater Clark County Schools, Mark Loeffner. So let's get back to some of those key elements of that reopening plan. What are the changes being made to allow for in-person education to happen? You mentioned masks. What else is in play?
Well, masks, we've purchased a great amount of supplies, PPE supplies in terms of hand sanitizer. We've set up hand sanitizer dispensing stations strategically throughout each school. Our bus drivers are disinfecting their buses before and after every route. Also, the cleaning, just the overall cleaning we're doing, has been amped up a great deal. We've contracted with a company where they come in every Wednesday to spray each of our schools. So it's in the middle of the week, each school gets sprayed down. You know, the mask issue, obviously. So, you know, we feel good about what we have in place, and we're trying to continue to make sure we stay on top of each and every one of those items, so that we're doing our due diligence in terms of cleaning schools and making sure that our buses are clean. And the other thing we've done at the high school level and the middle school level, about a week and a half, 2 weeks before school started, we decided to flip our schedule to a block schedule at the middle and high school. High schools in our district. That way there's less movement in the buildings. Also, teachers only see three classes a day, or four classes a day, I'm sorry, versus, you know, the typical seven. And so that has lessened the movement in our secondary schools and lessened, you know, how often those teachers see each group of students, the cohort group. So little things like that we've tried to do and we've done, and that's worked well so far.
Are you taking those cues from other districts? You know, are there forums where you're hearing, okay, well, if you haven't done block scheduling before, then that might be a good choice. How'd you come by that conclusion, I guess?
Well, we were a district that had done block scheduling in the past, and frankly, our secondary principals came to the administration talked to my director of secondary schools and asked if that was something they could do just to decrease the amount of movement in the building when students are there. And of course we were fine with that. Absolutely. You know, it decreased the amount of movement and also how often teachers are seeing cohort groups. So, but we also have been in conversation with other districts, other superintendents on what they're doing, you know. And I will say in Greater Clark, we were a little bit ahead of everybody else because we already had e-learning in place in Greater Clark, and we've had a one-to-one initiative, computer initiative with our students in place for over 10 years. So from that standpoint, once we went into e-learning last spring, we were ready for it. You know, we jumped into it pretty seamlessly, which allowed us to then jump in to start planning for how we're going to reopen schools. So we were a little ahead of other districts, you know, around us in that regard.
Can your students still ride the bus?
Yes. Yep. Now, I will say the number of students riding the bus is down. I would say it's probably down 50%. You know, a lot of parents have decided just to transport their own kids. So our car rider lines are pretty packed each morning so far. But actually, that's a good thing. You know, less students on the bus. You know, that's a good thing, really, in regards to this whole situation.
What about your faculty? How are they feeling? I mean, we've learned that children may not be as affected by the virus at the same rates as adults, but that still leaves a lot of adults there and in an uncertain position. What are you hearing from staff?
Well, they're anxious. I will say that they're very anxious about, you know, starting school and how this, what's going to look like, you know, and just, you know, all the things you hear in the media and social media about how the virus impacts some adults versus others. So there's a lot of anxiety there. I will say that, you know, but our staff has been really good from the standpoint of they understand that, you know, students want to be back in school, need to be back in school, you know, and we needed to at least try to get them back into school.
A teacher at Jeffersonville High School did test positive for COVID-19 prior to the start of the school year, and consequently, the high school hasn't reopened for in-person classes. What's the protocol here? How will positive cases be handled?
Well, we worked with the health department on that, where a teacher had actually been in our building on a Friday and was in their classroom just doing work. You know, teachers didn't even have to report yet, but teachers being teachers, you know, they want to get things ready, and they were in the building, and actually we were around a few other teachers and helping them move things in their classroom. And then that teacher found out they were positive on that Saturday following the Friday. So we felt, you know, in talking to the health department, Dr. Yeza, we felt like it was best to quarantine those teachers that teacher was around, and also felt like it was best just to go ahead and delay Jeffersonville's high school's start, in-person start for a week, and just do e-learning for the first week. So we worked with Dr. Yeza and the health department very closely, and they recommended we do that. So, you know, that's what we did, and we'll do something very similar. You know, if we have staff members that test positive, you know, if we have to quarantine that whole class of students, if it's at the elementary level, or quarantine certain number of kids along with that staff member or teacher, then we'll do that. We'll work with the health department, you know, and follow their guidance.
Are you requiring COVID testing for teachers?
We did not. For them to come in, we have not, just because of the response, how long it takes to get the response back.
The word fluid keeps being used to describe reopening plans. I mean, as a lot of education heads acknowledge, things could change at any time. So what kind of impact does that kind of uncertainty have on a school system?
Well, it certainly changed my day, you know, and our executive team, you know, where we're dealing with just issues that pop up here and there. Just like on Friday, we had some students that we had to quarantine because of positive cases at two of our high schools. You know, and then you have to contact trace and work with the health department. So it takes a tremendous amount of time. You know, and so that's a big change, you know, in terms of all that. And the plan is fluid. I mean, you know, like I said, if Dr. Yazel recommends we shut down a certain school, we're going to do that. If he recommends we shut down a group of schools in a community because the numbers are on the rise in that community, whether it be Jeffersonville, Charlestown, or New Washington, then we're going to do that too. And if we get to a point where, you know, we're having issues, maybe staffing issues, that's one of my concerns as superintendent, you know, is if you get a certain number of bus drivers that have to be quarantined or a certain number of teachers that have to be quarantined, at that point, you really have no choice to maybe but shut down for, you know, a couple weeks. And quarantine everybody for a couple weeks because you just don't have the manpower to for transportation or for a certain school. It's very similar to the rules that are already in place for just the common flu, you know, that once 20% of your students, you know, are out of school because they have the flu, then you're supposed to shut down, you know. And so it's very similar to that could potentially happen, you know, during this situation.
Mark Loeffner is superintendent of Greater Clark County Schools. Mark, thanks for joining us today. We wish your district the best this school year.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
We'll have more on schools reopening in Indiana when we come back, and you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. I'm Matt Pelzer. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelzer. Back now to our discussion on how schools are navigating the upcoming school year. We're not live today, but we still welcome your thoughts and comments. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. The rate at which children become infected or act as carriers of COVID-19 is still unclear, though some preliminary data suggests that children are less vulnerable than adults. So while it may be safer for children to return to school, where does that leave teachers and staff? We're joined now by the president of the Indiana State Teachers Association, Keith Gamble. Keith, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me today.
So between increased virtual learning, reopening plans in constant flux, and navigating a pandemic, this school year looks like none other we've dealt with before. How are teachers doing right now?
It's a very stressful time. Back to school always is. But certainly this year, with everything that is going on and that everything changes on a regular basis, it's added a great deal to the stress level.
So what are the big concerns you're hearing from teachers at the moment? What are people saying?
Currently, it ranges from those who have underlying health conditions that are concerned about themselves through wanting to make sure that students' privacy is maintained if there's simulcasting of classroom or videoing during the classroom in order to have that available for students who are doing remote learning. And they want to make sure that their students' privacy is maintained, making sure that they're able to do everything that is asked of them, which includes knowing when they should have their mask on and that they're properly distancing themselves and clear guidance on how to have their classroom set up and tracking of their students should there be a case reported and the school nurse or your building principal comes to you and says you've had this student and they need to look at where that student may have been in the classroom and what students they were in contact with. So there's so many things that are brand new in addition to just working to prepare their lessons. And for many teachers, that's preparing the lessons in a multitude of ways, which ranges from students who are in person, students who are remote, and being prepared should the school district announce the evening before that the school itself will be remote the next day.
So far, decisions about how and when to reopen schools have been largely made at the local level. There's a lot of autonomy there. COVID-19 case counts do vary from county to county, of course, but what are your concerns about a lack of requirements to reopen at the state level?
Well, we have called on the governor twice now to be have greater emphasis on standards from the state level, so that everyone, educators and families alike, know and understand the state criteria, and then provide those local districts a little bit of guidance as it relates to the statistics within their own county or school district. And we've been concerned that the governor has been a little light on what has been presented, especially as it relates to the number of cases within within an area, and how well they can report of a decline of cases within a district.
So, what I guess have you heard from the state?
Well, the state has issued some guidance. Much of that is related to masking and social distancing and hand washing, which all of those are important. But what is missing is a greater emphasis on what is taking place within a particular community. How many cases are there? Are those case numbers going up or are they coming down? That type of guidance is missing currently. It was that you were masked if you were 6 feet apart. That changed so that it's now students are masked if they are less than 3 feet apart, and teachers at 6 feet apart. And so, you know, that some of that mixed messaging that occurred created some anxiety in for sure knowing what those standards were. And so always making sure that we have clear guidance at the state level, and then knowing how that will impact what their local plan is.
Does it concern you that we've already seen reports of positive cases from schools that have reopened in person?
Yes, but I think everyone was expecting that to happen. So part of what we have to be monitoring now is what is taking place. Are they following the guidelines that they set forward? Do we know how cases are tracked and how they're maintaining and watching and observing what is taking place? In order to not have that one case become 5 or 10.
The Indiana State Teachers Association has urged the governor to issue those guidelines for closing and opening school buildings during the pandemic, like you mentioned. You outlined the points in a letter to the governor. Let's walk through those. So, number one, the COVID-19 pandemic must be under control in the community served by the school before in-person learning is permitted. What would you consider under control?
And we're basing this off of what we're hearing from our healthcare professionals, and that would be that it would be below 5%, and that it has been declining over the past 2 weeks. And that's, you know, measuring your key indicators such as infection rates, your hospitalization rates, hospital capacity. Many of those numbers are reported on a regular basis from at the state level. But that is where we believe that the case rate should be.
Okay. The second point is specific protections must be put in place in all schools to keep the virus under control and protect students and staff. What kind of extra protections would you like to see? It sounds like there's already some decent ones in play.
Well, we have a number of issues that aren't always thought about that occur in a school setting. And so one example would be a speech pathologist who is working with students and their need to be able to, for the student to see the instructor's mouth, and for the instructor to be able to see the student's mouth. So What plans are in place for plexiglass partitions to be put or available for instruction when we're needing to have that type of instruction for students? We want to make sure that we don't have supplies on order, but that we actually have supplies on hand, and that that those are ready and available to everyone, and that we also have provided within the school day the time to make all of this happen. You know, there's one thing to getting the regular routine down with your kindergarten, first, second graders. There's another to get that routine down now that you've got to add on the need to be washing hands, making sure that you're not touching others or touching other surfaces when you shouldn't be. So those type of issues that exist, that's just part of the regular school day, making sure that all of that time is put in place.
We're talking about reopening schools today, and we're joined by the president of the Indiana State Teachers Association, Keith Gamble. So there's a point in your letter that advocates for both families and teachers to have a voice in how schools reopen. So if we see families in favor of in-person instruction and teachers who feel differently, how do we balance that?
That is certainly an area that needs to be addressed. And so you want to take a look at what is the evidence and make sure that the decisions are made by data and not by emotion. And so that's part of why we were asking for greater guidance at the state level, and certainly wanting to make sure that the plans at the local level are very clear and defined, so that you remove as much ambiguity from the decision-making process as possible. That is a way that then you have both the families and the staff on the same page.
And the last point calls for plans to be put in place to ensure continuous learning for all students. We've already seen some schools have had to move from in-person to virtual learning, of course. And if schools keep having to go back and forth throughout the school year, how do we make sure that curriculum isn't entirely disrupted?
And this is an issue that existed prior to COVID, and is something that needs to be addressed and that we will continue to work on, and that is the inequities that exists around the state for our students, whether that's access to broadband or access to quality devices that will allow for instruction to go on in an uninterrupted manner. Even though a building may close, that instruction is able to continue. And it varies so much from an urban area to a rural area in Indiana, what those inequities look like. For some, it is an issue of connectivity. In other places, it is the ability to have the right resources in order to assist those students when they're home. And then we also have to recognize that we have students and families who this form of education is completely foreign to them. And logging on at a certain time to work through the lessons and making sure that they become familiar and comfortable with the device and how the instruction is going to be is going to be delivered to the students. And that's why it is so important that we are taking a look at these inequities that exist and doing all that we can to help.
What kind of guidance have teachers been given as to how to facilitate virtual learning?
Some of that depends on the platform that they are using. Not all schools are using the same platform. They have through their school district, but the ISTA, we've set up some platforms for our members to share with one another as soon as they've learned a new trick, they're out there posting that up for other members. And so we're really working to network across the state to share best practices and help one another out.
And not only are teachers teaching the curriculum this year, but in a lot of ways, they're going to be teaching students how to do school differently. Teachers are learning at the same time how to do it differently. Are schools adequately staffed to make this transition?
Well, it is certainly something that needs to continue to be monitored. And that would be, do we have folks who were looking at who could retire now, but were planning to work for another year or two? Have they decided to go ahead and retire ahead of time? And you know, want to make sure that you have all of those positions covered, and so that you want to know that you're prepared in all of those cases. I do know that for many that pushed the start date back for the beginning of school, part of that time was used for staff to begin to learn the platform that they would be using, because the instruction in this fall will in many ways be different than what we were doing in March when everything got shut down quickly. Because at that point it was just, let's figure out some way to deliver some kind of work to kind of get them through the last 9 weeks. Now we're looking at what will be impacting much of the 2021 school year. And so it is very much about making sure that we have staff trained and ready for how to deliver their lessons in a myriad of different ways.
Another thing you acknowledge in the letter is additional support for families. You've talked a little bit about that already. I mean, is it true that for a lot of families without in-person instruction, their lives are majorly disrupted? I think the answer, of course, is yes. But what support do you think should be considered for families?
Well, it's some of the ideas that have been floated would be for working families, the ability for us to continue learning online, but the ability to possibly open up some of the buildings and to have staff available that would, the rooms would then operate in, I'll show my age, study hall type, where the students wouldn't be with their specific teacher, but would have an adult there. And so if it's a single family and a parent is needing to go to work, that student is able to go to a building, and it may not have been their home building. It's a building that is open by the district where they can attend the same number of hours and do school during the school hours and provide some type of flexibility. That's just one example of ways that we've talked to the governor about this. It was in our most recent letter that we are willing to sit down with him and other school leaders to help work out what are some ways that we can be available in for our families in ways that are different than general in-person instruction.
In our last 30 seconds, if a teacher is in a school district with a reopening plan that they're concerned about, what should they do?
The first thing they should do is contact their local president and their ISTA staff person that assists with that school district, so that they can then begin to devise the best plan for that teacher or for them to help organize with their local, to meet with their school district in order to make sure that they have a nice, solid start to the school district.
Keith Gamble is the president of the Indiana State Teachers Association. Keith, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you very much.
I'm Matt Pelser. Thanks for listening this hour. This is All In.